Awesome.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. I'm John Burke, and with me from across the pond is Matt Hudson from whatiwatchtonight.co.uk. Matt, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well, my friend. I'm going to tell you something. I've eaten the biggest watermelon this evening. Oh. Not the whole thing, but it might as well.
Okay, I was concerned.
Yeah. I'm a glutton for food, but not that much. I went to, we've got a local market in town. It's the best one in the county, best one in the state, if you will. And they have melon, which is longer than my daughter's arm. And she picked it for that reason, because, you know, kids are always going to pick the biggest thing. And I thought, how much is this going to cost? This thing is huge. It's fresh. It's massive. It's heavy. It cost me £1.60, which is about $2 for a melon, which is probably about the size of your bicep, John, or your thighs. And it was a big boy. I didn't have the whole thing. She took it home with her, and it was so big, I ended up taking a quarter home with me. So I've had that. So I'm kind of feeling a bit of a melon haze, but I feel good for just eating pure water. No calories, pure water. I've got to ask you, JB, watermelon, firstly, do you like it? Secondly, what do you do with the seeds, you know, the black seeds? Do you eat them or do you just pick them out?
I do like watermelon. I went through a long phase where I didn't eat a lot of fruit. And over the last couple of years, that's no longer the case.
Nice.
I often buy seedless watermelon, though, here. And I don't know if that's a U.S. thing or if that is a everywhere thing now. But seedless watermelons are the convenience. I would not eat the seeds, though. I would spit them out eating watermelon with the seeds. But of course, because when we were children, we were told that they would grow into watermelons in our tummy. And I don't want to give birth to a watermelon because that feels painful. So, you know,
how are you doing anyway, though, my friend? How are you? How's Florida keeping safe and well?
It's fine, I guess. I did not get to have watermelon before recording. I actually had the opportunity to have some food that I opted out of for no particular reason, but they had like some appetizer type stuff from a very popular chain restaurant, and it smelled quite good, but I was like, it's a weird time, because I've already had lunch and dinner's coming up, so I didn't want to eat a bunch of like greasy appetizer food. And then I really regret, to be honest, turning down a piece of cake. It was, but they cut the slices, like, they're so big, like, because they buy this giant retirement cake, and there aren't that many of us that were able to, like, attend this retirement party for a coworker, who I adore, and I'm very sad to see leaving, but I just wasn't up for cake right then, even though it looked amazing, and I'm sure it was, but I also, it would have been, like, a meal worth of calories, because it's such a big piece of cake they cut. And I know you could be like, oh, you could just eat a little bit. I would eat the whole piece. Like, I know me, once it's in my mouth, I'm going to eat the cake. So I just opted not to have it. So, I'm a little hungry. I'm okay. I had a protein cookie, before recording to at least give myself something to tide over the dinner time, food. But, you know, I'm overall ready to discuss this movie. It's one of those things where I would like to say so many things about the film we're here to talk about today, folks, which is John Wick Chapter 4. They opted not to do that this time. Woo-hoo! That's right. It's just Chapter 4. I think we could all erase Parabellum off of our Blu-ray copies of John Wick Chapter 3 and pretend that they never made such a weird choice to do that. But I gotta say, folks, if you haven't listened, we've covered Chapter 3 for sure on this podcast. I feel like we had to have done 2, right? Like, time-wise?
I think we definitely probably covered it in some way, shape, or form, whether it is a main show or as a kind of, we also watch this segment.
Yeah, and the show started in weird fragments where we would do 4 movies at a time, so we might have covered it in one of those older episodes like that, but we've both been pretty big fans of this franchise. I love Keanu in general, even though I don't think he's the greatest actor. I just love him when he's cast correctly. And John Wick has been one of those characters where he fits perfectly, both the tone and the character. The film is directed by Chad Stahelski. Is it Stahelski?
I heard it was, I think Keanu said Stahelski. So Stahelski will do.
I added a bunch of letters that first attempt, and then I realized, I'm like, there's no, some of those letters aren't in the word. But Yeah, but it's written by a few people, which I don't believe to be true. Shea Hatton, Michael Finch, Derek Kolstad. It has, of course, Keanu Reeves in the lead role, which also, like, the name that I got from the Wikipedia, I'm like, is this accurate? I don't remember them ever calling him Jardini Janakovich. And I gotta ask, have they called him Jonathan in the other movies and I just forgot?
I don't know, but it felt jarring to me.
Right? Okay, it wasn't just me then, because I was like, yeah. When they said Jonathan, I'm like, hold up. I'm not surprised that his name is Jonathan, but why are we suddenly calling him that in movie 4? But never, and as a Jonathan, it did throw me off. Donnie Yen is in this film as Kane, Bill Skarsgård as the Marquis Vincent de Garmon, Lawrence Fishburne as the Bowery King, returning in that role. I'm going to mispronounce this guy's name, but I love him. Hiroyuki Sanada, as I don't think his name is important. I don't think you ever really hear his name. Shamir Anderson, who is kind of, from what I've read, it was like a breakout casting choice to bring Shamir into this. Like, he's supposed to be getting a big push. We have what I'm not sure if it's Lance Reddick's final role or not. I don't know if he had filmed anything.
Not his final role to be released. There's still, I think, one more to come. Okay.
I'm not surprised because the man worked. If anything, Lance Reddick worked. And so I wouldn't be surprised if a bunch of stuff still was out there in the ether, but very emotional to see him. I loved him in this franchise and I was happy that he was in this one. Rima Sahawani. Sawayami. There's an M there. Scott Adkins, who I didn't know much about, but apparently Scott Adkins, big action star in other countries.
Stunt performer as well.
And then Ian McShane, I did not put Ian at the bottom here. I want to point that out. That was where he was listed. And I was like, why is he so far down? Like, he should be like number two. Right. This movie, John Wick uncovers a path to defeating the High Table. That means nothing if you haven't seen the other movies, but before he can earn his freedom, Wick must face off against a new enemy with powerful alliances across the globe and forces that turn old friends into foes. Currently sitting 95% Rotten Tomatoes, 96% audience Rotten Tomatoes score. So both critics and audiences love this movie. 78 Metascore, 8.5 IMDb user score, and a 4.2 on Letterboxd, which is, I feel like, one of the highest Letterboxd averages that we've ever covered on this podcast.
I think you're right.
Letterboxd is usually pretty fickle, and it's usually like a good score is like 3.5. So like 4.2 is high. And it's currently only in theaters. As I said, I've been a big fan of this franchise. A lot of people are saying this is the best of the franchise, and I think you could make an argument that it's got the best action in the franchise. I think it has some issues in story. I've had a lot of people, several of my students, who are like, but you're not seeing John Wick for the story, and I disagree with that, because you are posing the idea that you don't need, or that you can't have both, that you can't have a good story and good action. And John Wick Chapter 1, which isn't called Chapter 1, but John Wick, I think, is a great example where the story, it's simple. The performance is exactly what it needs to be. They don't do anything overtaught. Everything is exactly there. But the story and the motivations of the character are always very clear and laid out in a way that I bought into. The world building of John Wick Chapter 1, which I have raved about for years, is so good. When you analyze it, you can start to pick out flaws, like the gold coins. They are weirdly the same value for everything. Everything is one gold coin, no matter what it is. But beside that, I think Chapter 1 is such a great example of being able to deliver really strong action and a really strong story. And I think 4 is solid, but there are some glaring issues that I will have to save for spoilers, because they do involve the ending. But for me, I don't think they succeed as well as I know they can, because I feel like little tiny changes would make the story more impactful. And that I find just a little disappointing. But man, this movie is just under 3 hours. And this is by far the longest in the franchise. And that was concerning when we saw that runtime drop, because it's like, well, what are you going to do for that long?
Yeah.
And I think they do a tremendous job with pacing and with using every minute. Like, every minute felt necessary. You could make an argument that, well, you don't need this fight to go on that long, or you don't need to have that many henchmen. But I'm not complaining about that. I was like, well, what inventive way are we going to have to do the next thing? And man, do they find ways to outdo themselves. There are some incredible cinematography choices in this. I don't know what spoiler is in this, because I don't think most people would care about some of the story beats, but I think they might care seeing or hearing about an action sequence that they're looking forward to seeing. So I don't want to talk too specific about the, especially the later parts of the film, because some of that stuff is, you're just like, wow, how did we get here? How did we figure this out? There's a lot in the trailer, but Keanu is crushing it. I think Donnie Yen is fantastic. Hiroyuki Sanada was also in Bullet Train last year, and so I've really enjoyed both of his those performances from him, and I was excited to see him back because I was like, oh, I loved him in Bullet Train. I think he's great here. I really enjoy what Ian McShane is doing in this whole franchise. I think Winston is such a compelling character. I loved how little he was in the first movie and yet how compelled I was by him. And then, man, Bill Skarsgård, dude, that guy, he's so good at being a villain, and we've seen him not be a villain, but
he still feels like a villain.
He does. Yes, exactly. and yet there's, I do like him. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't agree with what he's doing, but I'm just like, man, you are charismatic. Like, I can watch you be this guy. As much as you anger me with the things you're doing, I'm still like, I'm not get off the screen angry. It's more like, ooh, I can't wait for John Wick to get to you. You know, like that's the hope versus it being like an annoying performance. And that's, I think it's a hard line to straddle for someone who like is so awful in this. Like, his villain is so, you're just like, oh God, this guy. But he's so interesting in his mannerisms and his behavior. And Skarsgård, not French, doing a French accent. Thought it was fine. I don't have any complaints. I would say it's better than maybe JGL's in The Walk. So low bar, but nevertheless, I really had fun with this movie. I actually, even it's 3 hours, so it makes me hesitate to go see it because, again, when you add in trailers and stuff, it's just over 3 hours. Like it's 2 hours and 40 minutes actual runtime, but then you add 23 minutes of trailers and them starting the movie late at my theater.
As always,
it's a 3 hour ordeal. And so I don't know for sure if I'm going to revisit it, but I definitely want to see this again. There's some at the very least, I want to watch clips from this movie again. Like, there are some action sequences that I just want to like analyze and watch. Cause it's incredible. Some of the choices they make. I ultimately had a really great time with this. When I want to really put out there, like, I'm saying 4.5 stars out of 5 versus like a perfect score. So while I'm saying like I wish there were some better things, I do think this is one of the strongest in the franchise. I still like one more, partly because I just think one is perfect across the board. I don't have any complaints with one outside of like, people might say, oh, well, it's cheesy. It's like, well, yes, that I don't disagree with, but I like the cheese that it's providing. And 4, I think, does a lot of stuff incredible. I think, again, the action sequences are so ambitious and so cool. I wish they'd stuck the landing with the story, though, because that's the part that really I was just like, I should feel more, and I didn't. So, Matt, what did you think of John Wick Chapter 4?
Not a million miles away from what you thought, John, which doesn't always happen. Sometimes it does, but in this instance, absolutely does. John Wick 4 is superb. Excellent. But it has just those few things missing. Like you mentioned, there's a few kind of major story beats which should have felt bigger or more epic, or they should have carried more weight than they did for me, and seems like for you as well. Maybe we'll have more stories to tell and we'll find out more. I don't know, but I think we needed to get a little bit more from certain moments. The runtime, I agree with you that I think it's too long, but what we got in these fantastic action scenes and fight scenes, some of the best choreography I've seen in a long time in an action film, what you got made you want more. So you may be waiting 15, 20 minutes for the next action set piece, but it's worth the wait for that. So they, for me, whilst I do think it is a little bit too long, classic BAMP complaint there, but it is nearly 3 hours long for an action film. I think the payoffs in this film, other than one or two which we'll allude to later, or maybe in the spoiler minisode, are well worth it. Yes, the action sequences, John, this is an action film. A lot of time on this podcast, I kind of chide action films for being a bit bland, a bit generic, or in some cases, like leaning on their influences too heavy to the point of plagiarism almost. But this is how you do it. The cinematography in these fight scenes is, like you say, this is top draw stuff. Now, they are absolutely not messing around here. And you could look at some. I've looked in some of the fights, maybe in John Wick Chapter 3, Parabellum, Wellum, and thought they're good. But are you trying too hard here to make them look nice for the substance? I didn't get that in chapter four. Dan Lauston is the cinematographer, absolutely nails it. But it isn't just the way that they're shot; it's also the lighting. The colour palettes they use are absolutely spot on. Another criticism I've had for neo-noir films especially, or films of this kind, is that they can try, like I mentioned, they can try to be too stylish by covering up flaws, by giving you like really cool-looking shots. Wow, look at all this neon we have, or look at the shot, this fight we're having in a beautiful like purple hue, which adds nothing to the story. I did not get that here. You get some of the best choreography I've seen in years, some of the best fight cinematography I've seen in years, and some of the best fight lighting and colour palettes I've seen in years. It's a marvel in that sense. Story-wise, I agree with you, JB, that for the most part, I'm on board with it. You do have to, like you mentioned, this isn't just cheese. John Wick is by now, it's the whole cheese board. There are moments in this where I'm thinking, you're not following the rules of your own film, of your own franchise, but it's so bombastic and so loud that I'm willing to go along for the ride, but I couldn't quite shake that. It gets a bit daft after a while. I'm going to probably alienate the majority of our listeners here, maybe even you, JB. You know what's coming. I love Keanu Reeves. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think he's an excellent, excellent man. I think he's a superb action hero, but goddamn, some of these line deliveries, JB, it was Bram Stoker's Dracula level of awful, I thought. Some of his line deliveries were bad. Compared to when you've got people like Ian McShane, when you've got people like Bill Skarsgård, and even Donnie Yen just absolutely nailing their lines. I think it showed Keanu up a little bit, and I don't mean that in a negative sense that he is the worst part of the film. No, because he is a bona fide action star. Like this dude drips cool with his suit on and doing the things he does. I just kind of wish that he had. I think I already had 380 words to say in the whole film. I kind of wish that if they were going to have him sort of spiral into this state of mind, which he's been falling in throughout these films, that he'd almost become mute at this point. I think it would have been a bit more effective for me. And some of the times he did speak did take me out, because I did think, that's just, the line delivery wasn't great. But I love seeing Keanu as this character. He's created a new icon. Well, he's now solidified a new icon in this genre. Donnie Yen is fantastic. Continuing that blind action star after playing Chirrut Imwe in Rogue One, back again. I think he's great in this film. I genuinely do think he is an excellent part of this world. Bill Skarsgård as well. Like you, he could have easily just been like a slimy creep. But I think that they gave him enough moments to show that, no, he will back up, you know, his position or his desires and wants. You know, he will do things and say things that make you think, yeah, this guy is, I do believe that whilst this guy is a bit of a slimeball, you know, he will back it up. I appreciated that he wasn't just a one note villain completely. I didn't mind the accent, and I love seeing Bill Skarsgård. And like you said, there's something about him, like he's got charisma for days, that you want to see more of him on screen. It was a bit like Heath Ledger's Joker. I'm not comparing the two, but I mean in the sense that he was the bad guy, but you wanted to see him. I wanted to see him more than Batman for a lot of the time in that film. And I think I want to shout as well to Rina Sawayama as Akira. I liked her for when she was in the film. Yep. I think she's a rising star as well. But yeah, JB, there's not a lot I didn't like about this film. I am actually on the same wavelength as you in terms of what kind of fell short. I like the music choices. I think the music, the needle drops were very cool. I loved the references to other films. So Stahelski has shown through all four films that he is a man of art, man of culture. He loves film, and there are some bona fide brilliant nods and influences in this film, or straight up send ups in one case. And it was fantastic to see, but yeah, John, a little bit overlong for me. It did start to pummel me down a little bit by the time we got towards the end. But you cannot deny that this is an absolutely insanely good action movie. And at what point now do we look at these four films and think, is this the best action saga series franchise out there? Like, for quality of the four films, is this the best or one of the best?
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely can make a case. You know, some of the story, I really felt 3 dropped a lot of the way the action was delivered. Like the first two films, the action is more about like it's endless waves of people and he's taking them out quickly, but they just keep coming.
So it's more 3 goes, isn't it?
Yeah, and then 3 becomes a traditional Hollywood action film where we have like 6-minute fights with one or two people, where he's not trying to kill them. And for me, that's a character flaw. It's not that it's bad to watch action wise, but I'm like, that's not who John Wick has been shown to be. And this movie, I feel like, returns to it a bit, where it feels more like the first two in that most of the fights, he is trying to take them out quickly so he doesn't get killed. And that's what I felt like 3 kind of dropped that in a bad way. Because again, I think the character, he's not that type of fighter. He's going to take you out because he is about surviving. 4 brings it back. But again, there's still, we do get some bigger epic fights, but I think they earn those much better in 4 than they did in 3.
I'd agree with that.
Mostly. There might be a few that maybe it should have ended a little faster. But
they look so damn good.
But there are some incredible action set pieces, which we're not talking about details, folks, because we don't want to spoil anything for you. But I don't know if either of us mentioned Lawrence Fishburne, but boy, he just seems to love chewing the scenery with this character. Like, he is so over the top, but it pulls me out. Like, I'm aware of it's a performance. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, this is Fishburne just hamming it up.
But it fits somehow, doesn't it?
It does fit. It's so weird that it fits. It shouldn't fit. But I do like it, especially I think because we know the Matrix relationship.
Yep.
So there's something like meta about them being together and him having fun with it that you're like, he wants to do this. This isn't a paycheck for Fishburne. This is like, I want to be with my friend Keanu. And I like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I appreciate that. So, because no doubt that Fishburne's a talented actor. Like, I love Lawrence Fishburne.
He's been around for long enough now for everyone to know what an actor he is. I just wanted to chuck in as well, JB. The director, Chad Stahelski, has said, and he said that Keanu might have a slightly different take, but he said that all four films take place over the course of like 8 months.
Yeah, I saw something like that. Yeah. Like, it's a very short period of time.
And I don't mind that, actually. Do you know what I mean? I read that. Firstly, I thought, really? That seems a bit of a stretch. But then I thought, well, actually, no, I quite like that everything's condensed down like this. You know, John Wick is, you know, these four films cover this time. So we don't have like 3 years. Like, we've got 3 years of, what was John Wick doing in those 3 years between parts 3 and 4, for example? Oh, no, we pretty much know what he was doing because these films, other than a quick 6-month break in between these two, 3 and 4, we know what he's doing because we see it. And I quite like
that. There are some, I wonder like if someone were to do like all the travel, because he does go from like, he's in a desert at one point and then he's in New York and then he's at, like, I'm sure if you add the travel, maybe that's not feasible that it's 8 months. I mean, obviously on a plane, we're never taking more than what, like, what's the longest flight? Like Australia to New York or something like that?
26 or maybe 30 hours,
But that's a long time. Like, if you do that multiple times, you're in the air a lot.
Jet
like
lag,
I don't know how often he's traveled. Yeah. So but it's still feasible to be within a year, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know what Keanu's take on it is, if he thinks that the same, but apparently according to Chad, he says it won't be too different, but it may not be 8 months.
Keanu's immortal, right? So time is relative and it doesn't matter to him. So, but that, folks, is our review. Matt and I just as positive as most of the other reception. Yeah. I think the Metascore is a more accurate representation of the quality of the film. I think in that 70, early 80 range. I think the action, you could argue, is like in the 90s, and then the other stuff maybe hurts it a little bit. But there are some definitely never forget type action moments in this movie. It'll be hard to top this as the best action film of the year. I hope somebody does.
Of course.
I can't think of one on the horizon, but you know, if in 2015 you told me Mad Max Fury Road was going to be my favorite action film, possibly of all time, I was not that hyped for that movie, and it blew me away. So who knows? It blew a lot of people away, but you know, I was not a Mad Max fan going into Fury Road, so I was not like, oh, can't wait. I just went in like, yeah, I guess, and then I was like, oh my god, this movie,
this is incredible.
This movie hits some of the levels of that. In it, like, you're just like, holy crap, how did you do this?
It feels earned this time. I know you said earlier on that certain things felt earned, but for me, the huge action sequences, the kind of plethora, the selection of kills available, I think in another film I would have watched this and thought, this feels like a greatest hits of how many cool kills can we get, but I genuinely didn't get that in this film. I kind of felt like, yeah, we've, you know, as Keanu would say, yeah, we've gone three films. We're here on this fourth one now. We're going big. We're going bold. You know, hit me with it. And they did. As far as I'm concerned, I think Chad Stahelski, who's only directed four films and they're all John Wick films. I mean, Jesus, that's not a bad batting record. I think they went hell for leather here, and it didn't ever feel like style over substance. And for me, personally speaking, that is one of the biggest compliments I'll give a film like this, where I kind of worried going in that they would build off of three and go too big, too much, but without any real rhyme or reason. And to this guy, I don't think they did. Was it big, over the top and bombastic? Yeah, it was. But it felt right.
Yeah, it felt more in line with what one and two was doing with the character, which I guess only makes the parabellum in the name for chapter three all the more appropriate, because it's what the heck happened with three? Like, three is like Hollywood got their fingers on this franchise for a little bit, and then this movie feels like they ripped it back for the most part. Yes. Kudos. Again, I like three, but nowhere near as much as one and two, and I like four way more than three. Well, folks, that's our review of John Wick Chapter 4, playing in theaters right now. Let's move on to our next segment. This is Chuffed Headlines. These are movie or pop culture news that caught our attention. Man, I almost said for you not to grab this headline, but let's do it. Matt, what is your headline?
Well, I almost said to me not to grab this headline as well, JB, for a variety of reasons, but kind of feels like it's something that needs to be spoken about. And it's the story of Jonathan Majors, and this is actually from Vox, and the article itself isn't necessarily, the headline itself isn't necessarily the story for me. The headline is Why Jonathan Majors' Assault Arrest is So Disturbing and So Complicated. Now, for me, I'm not interested in that side of it. It was more that I think it's worth touching on. Obviously, firstly, let's just get it out of the way now. At the time of recording this show on this day, these are all allegations. Nothing's been proven. There is no charges being levied which are going to result in any kind of criminal prosecutions as of yet. Who knows? By the time we're listening, maybe they have been. But at the minute, all allegations. But obviously, the story came that Jonathan Majors was arrested in Manhattan on misdemeanor charges in a reported domestic dispute with his girlfriend. And kind of the points I wanted to raise was, firstly, you know, again, innocent till proven guilty, and as well as, of course, but you know, we've spent a lot of the last few weeks, the last few months saying what a star, you know, what a star this guy is, you know, what an absolute, and the film and the roles he has been in recently, he has, you know, absolutely nailed. He's done such a good job. The guy is an absolute talent in front of the camera. But obviously, it's come out recently, in recent days, that apparently there is a track record of bullying, or of just not being a great guy on set, which has only now come out, which obviously then raises the question, which a lot of people have asked, of why now? But this is that's a wider story for another time. It was more that I saw this headline and actually thought it was going to be about something else, JB. I thought that the headline was actually going to be about the bonkers, the crap I've seen online about, but what about What about the Kang Dynasty, John? What about Secret Wars? What's going to happen to that? Who cares? You know what I mean? It was more about the kind of the fandom's reaction to this. At the minute, again, it's all allegations. And when the truth is out, of course, as adults, and we'll all deal with it, whatever the courts decide on. I'm not going to sit here and try and be judge, jury and executioner or anything stupid like that. But a lot of people online have, as is the horrible world we live in. And I just saw a lot of people saying about, you know, what happens to the MCU now? What happens to his Oscar chances for Magazine Dreams later on in the year? What do we do about that? And I thought, if that's your first thought, then what is going on here? Like, if I don't know if this is true or not, but at the center of it is somebody who may or may not have been assaulted, or by the looks of it has been, we just don't know by who. There's the issue. Not,
yeah.
Or and why, yeah. Not, yeah, but what about Kang? You know, guy's a variant. Replace him if needs be. But I just kind of thought I'd mention it because we've spent the last few months, you know, talking up this guy. And I didn't think it would be necessarily right to not mention, at least bring it up, and in a way that we're not saying, oh, now look at him, he's having the biggest downfall in Hollywood, like a lot of people are saying. But it's sad to hear, you know, his team are saying, oh, look, we've got provable evidence, it's all going to be fine. But this kind of thing leaves a stain, doesn't it, JB? But the question more so was, you know, what did you think about, I could probably guess, but the kind of fandom or the social media reaction towards this story?
Yeah, I mean, we're so involved in the industry as like a peripheral, you know, entity of it, right? We only exist because it exists. And so I think there's some obvious reasons to think those thoughts, to like, well, how is it going to affect these projects and these things? Because they are, I mean, they're scheduled, right? Like, they're literally like on the books. And so for so many people, it's jarring. Because I think when we look back 20 years ago, we knew there was a chance a movie would have a sequel. But we didn't usually have like the next 5 years mapped out when we were going to get these movies. And so it is weird in the culture that we're in, especially the MCU specifically, when we have this kind of infrastructure and we've witnessed how it played out once before. So a lot of the assumptions are that it's going to play out very similarly, and that when this guy is your backbone, I'm not surprised so many people focused on that. It's clearly wrong. We should be concerned for the victim. We should be concerned for the man here, that like, not whether or not he's going to be Kang anymore, but like, is he okay? Like, if he did the thing he's accused of, does he need help? You know what I mean? Like, is this a sign of something deeper wrong and needing that assistance? And obviously there's been a lot of things coming out online. The validity of those are all, of course, in question. Yep. The validity of this claim from both, you know, the victim's claim is being called to question by Major's team, which is to be expected.
Yes.
And that's a troubling thing, right? In a post Me Too world, anytime we're casting shade or doubt onto the person making an accusation, I get very nervous, because it is possible for someone to lie, but it's also a big risk for them to lie. It's a big risk for them to put themselves out there like this, and. Yep. I don't ever want to be in a position where we're doubting victims. I hope that no one in any situation would lie about something horrific, because it does make it harder for the real victims in the future. And if what Major's team is saying is true, there's going to be some very bad ramifications because of this. And of course, just because one of the things I saw was that the victim has recanted the charges.
I saw that, yeah.
Like, we know in the past, sometimes victims are convinced or persuaded to not. And so it doesn't prove anything. And that's what stinks, is that all of this is playing out in real time for the world to watch, all of the chaos. And I don't want to hold judgment on anybody, here because I don't know what happened. I'm not saying I haven't had feelings, but I'm trying to be more analytical and passive on this. I hope Jonathan Majors is innocent. I hope it's a misunderstanding. I hope there's clarification. I hope the person who was injured, that she gets justice from whoever actually injured her. If it was Majors, then he needs to be punished. If it's somebody else, they need to be punished. But I'm most concerned for the people involved. And yes, it is going to be interesting to see what happens in the industry if this is what it has been said to be. But, you know, before we got so hung up on continuity, people were recast all the time, and it wasn't that big of a deal. Movies are fake. We know they're fake, everybody, right? Like, we all acknowledge that they're fake, so we can just pretend that it wasn't him if that's what has to happen. You know what I'm saying? Like, if that is what ends up being the situation, they can recast. We all accept, you know, Don Cheadle as War Machine.
Yes.
He wasn't, you know. Nope, so that's not even like unprecedented. Yeah, it's not even unprecedented in the MCU. You know what I'm saying? Like, so it's really, that should be the least of our concern. It will be sad, though, to see someone that we've all, especially, you know, you and I on this podcast have raved about how much we think Majors is a tremendous talent. I would hate to see that talent squandered by some, either a bad choice or, you know, I hope it's not worse. I hope it is a single moment of bad decision making versus it being a character trait, you know? Only time will tell. And I think we should be, you know, be passive, let this play out, make decisions based on truth and not speculation and not rumor. And if there are other victims, as some people have claimed, I hope they take this person's action and step forward to help. If this person is a monster, then we shouldn't let that monster continue to rain terror on people. If this person's not a monster, then they should not be made to be one. There are plenty of monsters out there that should be focused on.
That's the problem as well. Is like I say, this leaves a mark. Now, if the charges are dismissed or he's found to be innocent, then he now needs to rebuild. That's just how it is in the public eye as well. But yeah. I hope, I mean, my biggest hope out of this, John, is everything you said there is bang on the money, by the way. But my biggest hope here is that they can sort it quickly, fairly, but amicably as well. Nothing to do with films, nothing to do with MCU or anything like that. Because to me, honestly, Jenna, I've said it on Twitter and I mean it. You've got to get your, I think people have got to give their head a wobble if that is their primary concern. Of course, people will think, Oh, well, I wonder what's going to happen. Of course, but
it's interesting to speculate for sure. Yeah, but yes, but
it's not. That's not the story here. I just hope for everybody involved this gets sorted quickly, because, like you said, this is in the public eye. It's a high profile case now, which I'm sure nobody wants, because I'm sure the people will want to get around the table, sort this out, or have it sorted out in a place of justice. I just hope it's done quickly for everybody's sake, and if whatever the correct ruling is found in the quickest way and the most fairest way, just so if people can move on in their lives in the ways that you said, JB, if it's rehabilitation or if it's making sure people are out of a situation where they can cause more harm, let's get there and let's make sure that the victim in this is safeguarded and gets the justice that they deserve, that they need. Because, like you said, this has far-reaching consequences and ramifications, which hopefully can be we can get the most softened version of all of them. But yeah, that's the big story coming out this week, JB. Yeah. I thought it'd be it's not nice to talk about, but it's kind of the elephant in the room somewhat.
I think I have a good palate cleanser, which is a much simpler one. I don't know how public everyone would know. I am not a fan of Todd Phillips' Joker. I didn't think it was bad. I definitely thought it was overhyped. And for me, I encourage people who do like Joker to seek out Martin Scorsese's Taxi Driver and The King of Comedy. Again, there's nothing wrong with influence or inspiration, but Todd Phillips' attempt at Joker always sat kind of sour to me, because it felt like someone who is remaking two movies that he saw, thought were cool, but didn't quite get the thematic relevance that Scorsese was pushing, and use a beloved character to do it. And that hurt me more than anything, because it didn't need to be Joker. And he's on record saying that the only reason Joker was that is Joker and not just some random clown guy is because it would put butts in seats.
Yeah, and it did.
And it did. It did very well. And a lot of people love that movie. And Joaquin gets the Oscar for that movie, if I'm not mistaken, right?
He does, yep.
The only character played by two different actors to get an Oscar or something like that.
Much all of them have been nominated for high awards at least.
I mean, Jared Leto apart from that.
But he was an Oscar winner. And I think Nicholson was as well. Fair. I think that's where it came from. Yeah.
But not for Batman. But yes, Nicholson definitely is an Oscar winner. So we got pictures of Lady Gaga, as Harley Quinn on the sequel to Joker. Joker Folie à Deux, I'm saying Folie it the same deux. Way three times. A duh. Man, I said it the same way three different times. Anyways, I saw the photos. I am a Lady Gaga fan, despite House of Gucci. And I really loved her in A Star Is Born, and I think she clearly has an acting talent. And I don't think she's bad in House of Gucci. I just think House of Gucci was a bad movie. And she's not. She's given some very bad dialogue in that film, but I don't necessarily think it's her fault. Oh, hey, Jared Leto connection. Just put that together. I think the pictures look cool. I have no beef with what I saw, but I'm curious, Matt, did you see the pictures of Harley Quinn?
I did see the pictures of Harley Quinn, and I mean, they look like Lady Gaga, you know, in makeup. With these set pictures always comes that kind of, I feel like I need to remove myself from it somewhat and not get too kind of, not disappointed, but kind of look at it in the context of the film, it's going to feel and look so much different. We don't know what she sounds like. We don't really know what her manner is in film, because we only know in terms of live action. We only know Margot Robbie's kind of powder keg Harley Quinn. I've got to imagine this version is going to be a much different version, I assume, because as Google tells me, folie à deux, the dictionary definition is delusion or mental illness shared by two people in close association. Yeah. So it ties in with the Joker and Harley's long-standing
traditional
relationship. Yep. And Bond. I like the pictures. I think they look good, JP. I'm intrigued by this film. Yeah. As for Joker,
it is supposed to be a musical too.
Yes. That is what intrigues me. If Todd Phillips can pull that off, because the first film or Joker, I did like it. I didn't think it was the masterpiece that certain sections of the world would tell you it is. And I certainly did not peg that as a $1 billion film. I still to this day do not know how it did. And that's not a shade. It genuinely isn't. But it just, you know, go back and watch the film, guys. It doesn't feel like a $1 billion film, or one that would have people rushing to see it time and time again. But we've had great low budget films. We've had great indie films and art house films, which will make, you know, half that or even a quarter of that, or even one tenth of it. Well, that's kind of where I base it on. That was clearly the angle they were going for, like you mentioned with the Scorsese link. You know, the films aren't designed to make that much, but they did. And I think, Joaquin Phoenix is very good in the role he's given. I mean, he becomes the Joker at the very, very end, but I think he's very good portraying the character and the mental illness side that he brings to it. So I'm interested to see what they do now, because of exactly that. This film was nominated for a ton of Oscars. It won for Best Actor. It was up for Best Picture. I think it was up for Best Director as well. And now they're spinning it into a musical. We've got Lady Gaga bringing her talents to it. Where do we go from here? You know, what's the logical step? Are the studios sitting there saying to Todd Phillips, "Hey, see that? You know that $1 billion film we did? I want another one.
Yeah.
And is that going to impede his, you know, quote unquote, creative vision, his artistry in this film? Dude,
unless this movie's real bad, though, I can't imagine it not making a bunch of money. It's going to make a ton. So shocking.
I don't want to say how much, because I absolutely flunked on Top Gun when I said 400 million tops. I'm going to say, okay, I think for me, Joker, folie à deux, without seeing the film, this will change upon hype and seeing it. If the first one made $1 billion, you know, I could see maybe a drop off. I could see maybe it topping out at max 800 million. And even that sounds wild. But of course, the film has to be good. It has to resonate with people. It has to have a reason to exist. The musical side of it, if it alienates even half of the people who went to see the first film, well, it certainly is not going to make anywhere near that billion. But I don't think, for me, this film doesn't need to make a billion to be a success. It just needs to be a good film. But I'm excited. Joaquin Phoenix, Lady Gaga together. The pictures look good. They feel in tone, in keeping with the first film. So, yeah, I'm intrigued, JB.
Yep, we'll see what happens. It's in production, so probably next year is the release date.
I'd say so, yeah.
So, I don't know an official date, but stay tuned. We will hear something, I'm sure, sooner than later. Let's move on to media consumption. These are movies, TV, video games, music, podcasts, etc., that we use to pass the time between recordings. Matt, what have you been consuming since the last time we spoke?
In terms of my consuming, I have been consuming the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast with Josh Horowitz. This week he had Florence Pugh on. I love Florence Pugh, so I was excited to hear what she said about her films, her career, and of course her cooking. She's obviously taken the world by storm with Florence Pugh's cooking hour, or cooking time. So that was a fun interview. I do enjoy Josh Horowitz's style of interviewing. It feels very laid back, and he generally gets, when needs be, the juice from his guests. But this was a cool interview. I enjoyed it. And I've been listening to the Double Toasted podcast. I've been listening to Dead Meat talk about Skinner Inc. And I watched their annual horror awards, which is very cool again. I do like those guys over there. In terms of films, JB, it's been a bag this week. It's been a bag. The most recent film I watched is Boston Strangler on Disney Plus. The Keira Knightley, Carrie Coon-led film with...
On Hulu here, folks.
Hulu for you guys over there.
Yeah.
David Dalmatian, Alessandro Nivola. You know, great cast in it. And of course, if you didn't get by the title, it's inspired by true events surrounding the Boston Strangler and that series of murders back in the 60s. And it's pretty good, actually, JB. It's very hard not to look at this and think Zodiac, because it actually has a similar tone in terms of its muted palette. It's very green, very grey looking film. But I thought this was, it wasn't as good as that. And I don't mean to pit two films against each other unnecessarily, but I do think it was better than She Said that came out last year. I think this actually succeeds more so in focusing more on the story rather than the people who are telling it, despite the fact that the two women involved, played by, say, Keira Knightley and Carrie Coon, became renowned, prominent journalists off the back of this story. I just think they were portrayed, for me, they were portrayed better a little bit, and the film was a bit more focused on its subject than She Said. But I enjoyed that film. I think I enjoyed Boston Strangler just a little bit more, but it's still missing something. The tension when it needed to be there wasn't quite there. The performances were good. But I can't help but think, damn, I remember watching Zodiac, and when Downey Jr.'s character got that call to come and meet the guy in the park, or when Jake Gyllenhaal's character goes to meet who he thinks is the Zodiac killer, and that tension, in that room,
man.
That's throttling. This film isn't, I mean, to be fair, this film does have a few situations where they really could have let into that a bit more and it felt right. But they didn't. They kind of pulled back. It was a 20th Century Studios film, and they kind of pulled back on it somewhat. But it's a decent watch. It's only an hour and 40 minutes. It's not a bad watch. I enjoyed it. I watched a film called Unseen. I sought the screener out for this. I think I saw Big Tuna, or at least a Disappointment Media Gang. I thought this film was pretty good, and I watched it. Went in with an open mind. It's an action thriller type film, and it's pretty good. It's not bad. It follows a woman who has been abducted by her ex-boyfriend, and he seeks revenge on her because she's in his mind she's wronged him, and she gets away with him, but it ends up being she enlists help from some random who she calls by accident on a wrong number to video call her way out because she's lost her glasses, she can't see, yada yada yada. Sounds crazy. That part of the film actually works. But they focus on these really over-the-top secondary characters who really, really spoil the film. They needed to add this villainous element into these two concurrent stories. And one part of it was not good, which really did bring the film down. But I think it's a first-time director. I cannot remember the director's name. I will get it up right now whilst we're talking.
She is Yoko Akumura.
Hang on. That is it. First time, there were some very cool transitions, some very cool creative shots, some great use of split screen and parallel scenes, which kind of marked her out as a director on the rise. I think the two central performances were pretty good. It's just everything around in terms of the other performances really did bring the film down. It's cartoony and I do not know what the hell they were thinking, but overall, not a bad film. However, I sat down at the weekend and thought, I really want to watch a film on streaming. What's out? What can I watch which looks quite good? And a film came up called Perfect Addiction. I thought, oh, this sounds a bit cheesy, but I know it's based on a book. So I thought, oh, what's the premise? Oh, it's about an MMA trainer and a rivalry between two fighters, and there's a trainer in the middle. I thought, okay, you know me, John, I quite like a film based on combat sports. This seems like a bit of me. Who's in it? Oh, well, you know, Kiana Madeira is in it, the lead of the Fear Street films, who, okay, she's fine. I didn't like her character in those films, but let's see what she brings here. It's probably one of the worst films I've seen in years. This is John. Oh, this is man. One of the worst films I've seen in years. My Letterboxd review, and I've said before, I don't like people who, I know some do. Maybe I think I'm just getting old, John. I think I'm just British, but I don't always like the witty Letterboxd reviews. You know, I'm here for the critique of it all. But I didn't put a witty one. I just put genuinely terrible, because it is genuinely terrible. The acting is vile. The story is unbelievably trite, cliche, conventional, unbelievable, pandering. It's the fight scenes are awful, are terrible. The music drops are awful. It looks bad. It's awful. I mean, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey is worse. This is an awful film. And I know since reading Upping, I know a lot of people are quite excited to watch this film because it is based on a book, or at least a series of books anyway. So it's an adaptation, and I know people are excited for it. I don't know what they're going to think when they see it. I thought this film was bad. So I will never, ever go back to watch Perfect Addiction, and I certainly won't be recommending it to anyone unless you really are a glutton for punishment or desperately need finish all the MMA films.
That does sound like a Perfect Addiction, though, right? Where, like, I did it once, and that's all I need.
I think you've got me there, JP. That's exactly what they called it, that Perfect Addiction. It's anything but perfect. But if you want to watch it, guys, then by all means, check it out. It's about an hour and a half, for an hour and 20 minutes, actually. It flies by. I just wanted to pull my eyes out by the end of it. But it's out there. It's on Amazon Prime or Prime Video. Don't check it out unless you really, really like MMA films and really bad romances. Lady Gaga tie-in.
Oh! I just realized what it was. I've seen that they've been pushing this at the Regal Cinemas, I think it's like an event. Yeah, it's like a special event, though. It's not getting a wide release.
I'm
and
so
I was like,
sorry.
Man, this looks terrible. And so it is.
It really is. And again, you know, kudos, shout out to Seth Rogen and Jonah Hill, whoever it was who said it, but I don't like to, you know, slamming on a film's work, but this is genuinely a bad movie. So yeah, that's Perfect Addiction. So hopefully next week's episode is a few more highlights, JB. Last thing I saw, of course, was the Mandalorian season 3 episode 4. I won't give spoilers in case people want to binge it at the end of the season, but I enjoyed this episode. It was the shortest one of the entire season, all three seasons. It's kind of, you know, the bookends are standard. Kind of Mando, we need to do something to fill the time, so we get this rather. It's a fun trip, you know. It's a fun side quest, but I couldn't help but sit back and think, okay. When the episode started and the kind of focal event happened, I thought, please do not say this is the episode, and we're spending a whole thing, you know, trying to get something back or someone back. Please don't. Mm-hmm. But instead, we have this bit in the middle, which I loved, you know, for a fan of the series and the saga. I was like, yeah, I'm here for this. I loved it. Very cool. I pumped the air at one point because someone was there who deserves all the love. I've spoken to the guy. He's an absolute hero. He's a great guy.
Oh,
yeah. The middle bit, the middle insert was the best part of the episode. I liked what was around it, but you know, bring on the next episode for me, JB. But I know you've seen it. What did you think about it, and what else have you been checking out?
I liked all the Grogu stuff. I won't say what that is, but I think that's the best stuff in the thing. There are some laughable stuff with the other, like the other, the main story of the episode that is like, wait, how long can you be inside of a creature?
Yes,
you know,
let's sleep on it before we can, before we find out what.
Yeah. the ending is also kind of weird because there's a decision made and you're just like, wait, those were in the ship.
I think it's gonna pay off into this kind of big cool moment later in the season.
Saw some fan theories, or not fan theories, I saw some, like, you know, writers like postulating what it could be inferring, and maybe cool, but also I don't know. I'm so on the fence right now with Star Wars. I don't like being here. Mm-hmm. I liked when I was one of the fandom people and I could be like, yeah, Star Wars, and now I'm just like, yeah, Star Wars. I still like lightsabers. They're still cool. Lightsaber, I'm excited. Also, I got to say, I don't remember which article, but someone posted something about like who has the coolest helmet. Some of the Mandalorian armor looks like children's toys. Like, the color palettes are so
funny
weird.
You say that. Well, that's exactly what Star Wars has been built on since, like, Return of the Jedi, isn't it? Well, New Hope is just flogging toys.
Yeah, and I mean, you're right. What an easy way. But yeah, like, I'm like, more importantly, because we've seen how Jin's armor has come to be. But you gotta, like, can you imagine, like, standing at the woman forging your armor and be like, can it be blue? She just, like, looks at you like, what? Yeah. Can it be blue? Like, you're a soldier. Yeah, can it be blue with a green stripe across the side?
I was gonna say, can I have blue and yellow, please? Well, I don't think those colors go, I want blue and yellow.
Yeah, like, yeah, that is the way. It's like, actually, it's not the way. Let me show you color theory.
Like, if you want to make an entrance, I suggest you use blue and white, blue and yellow.
Yeah, it's such, like, I like Bo-Katan's armor, and you kind of get why hers is not traditional, though, because she seems to be the non-traditional Mandalorian, right? Like, you're like,
cartoon as well, so they've carried that over.
Yeah, well, sure, but I'm saying, like, when you look at, like, Mando's, for me, Mandalorian, when I think Mandalorian now, it was obviously Boba Fett, but we've learned that he's not Mandalorian, and then Jin, like, everything else I'm just kind of learning because I didn't watch the Clone Wars, so I wasn't familiar with Bo. But yeah, it's just a goofy comment. I have no real beef with it, but it is kind of funny when you think about it.
What colors would your Mandalorian colors be? So all I'll ask, if they said, John, here's your best car, you get two colors.
This is a pretty obvious answer if you've followed Burke Reviews, but red and black, I think could look so cool. That's one of the reasons I love Darth Maul so much, to be honest, because I'm just like, look at that. Red and black, he looks so cool. I can't believe you haven't started Ted Lasso, man. Ted Lasso season 3, 2 episodes out. I love both episodes so far. Really, really clicking with the tone and the vibe of that series still. And I really do hope they hold true and this is the last season, because I just think carrying this energy for longer, it would be a challenge. And I'm so impressed that they've been able to do it. I was a little worried jumping into season 3, to be honest, because it's been a minute. And it has gotten so popular since I first came into Ted Lasso. I was a little bit ahead of the curve. And so I do have a little bit of, like, over, like, everyone has the believe sign and it's like, okay. Yep. But man, it pulled me right back in. I'm like, yep, this is great. This is why so many people have it. I mentioned on our last episode that I had a coffee hangout with a friend and a colleague. And she really pushed that I watch Abbott Elementary. And I ended up watching all of it, and I think just over a week. I paced myself at first, and then I just, like, you know, I'm just going to binge this. I'm very sad because I didn't know I was going to hit the end. I actually thought I had 2 more episodes. Somehow Hulu tricked me, and I thought there were 21 episodes in season 2, and there's only 19.
No.
And I was very bummed when 19 ended and there was no more. I was like, wait, what? I really like the show a lot. It's as a teacher in today's climate, it definitely, you see the research has gone into this. A lot of the issues that teachers are facing are in the show. Not something so specific to Florida, mind you, but just in general, like teaching the attitude about charter schools. There's a lot in the show. Leslie Odom Jr. Is in it, but barely, but he's great when he's in it. It was exciting to see him on the show. yeah, I know they're doing season three, I think. I don't know when that's coming, but I definitely recommend the show. It's on Hulu here in the States. It's an ABC series, but it is on Hulu to watch all of season one and two.
Nice. It's on Channel 4 in the UK and the associated streaming service.
Blank Check Podcast. We did the Slumdog Millionaire episode, which, of course, was it's one of those Oscar winners that I think people question whether it should have been Best Picture or not at this point. So hearing the guys talk about it was good. I think collectively the answer is kind of maybe it's not the Best Picture, but it's still – there's an entertaining movie. It introduces us to Dev Patel in a big way, and that's a bonus because – yeah, I think it's watchable for sure. It's not a bad movie. I don't know if it's
the big one.
I watched it a couple of years ago for Movie Club Podcast. Corey and I had not seen it. We did a Danny Boyle like mini series where before Blank Check, haha, guys. And we hit Sunshine and we hit that. I could be wrong. It may not have been a Danny Boyle mini series. We might just like Danny Boyle enough that we were seeking out his movies for the themes that we were doing. But either way. We did watch Slumdog for that, and I did like it. I did find it odd that there are two Danny Boyle films where someone dives into a toilet. You know, like that. That's weird. That
trope now.
Twice.
Or turn twist.
Right. But then for movies, I couldn't remember if I mentioned seeing Rye Lane. I think I was going to watch it when we recorded last time. You had recommended it. Big Tuna recommended it. I liked it a whole lot. My review is up at Disappointment Media. Really quirky, fun rom-com. Don't love all the visual choices. Some of them feel real jarring. Like there's some, I don't know if it's a fisheye lens or if it's just a wide angle lens that is being used up close that distorts some of the images. And for me, it doesn't
outside, on the external frame.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything like thematically or like you there's no resonance it. For it. It's just a weird stylistic flourish that
I've
don't
noticed
think.
That in a lot of films though, not to discredit the point because I loved Rye Lane, but it's something I've noticed in a few films recently where on the edge of the frames and sort of like impeding a little bit, intruding a bit more, it's just blurry and distorted and it is noticeable. And I kind of think, is that a deliberate choice or is it something that was missed in the editing? Yes. But clearly it's a deliberate choice.
Or not knowing the equipment or not, picking the wrong lens, maybe not having a knowledgeable cinematographer.
Focus,
I want to believe it's a decision, right? Mm-hmm. But it's hard to tell.
Yep.
Then 127 hours, because I'm going to be busy this weekend and that's the next episode. So I needed to watch it ahead of time. I also need to watch Trance here pretty soon because I haven't seen Trance. That's the last Danny Boyle film I haven't seen. I purposely avoided 127 hours because of the subject matter, and I'm not a big James Franco fan.
Even before allegations came out, I think he's good in this film. I think he has his moments. I think this film's actually very good.
It is.
I hear you though.
I was unsure. Well, I still think watching if you know the premise, there's a scene that has to happen that I was very apprehensive about. I actually think it's still bothersome, but it's not as troubling as I was afraid it could be.
Yeah.
I didn't know how like grisly the visuals were going to get, that kind of thing, and they are grisly, but it was better than I had anticipated. Like I thought it was going to be like where I couldn't look at the screen for several minutes kind of thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure how you could make a movie and engaging for that long, where it's just a dude stuck between a rock and a hard place, so to speak.
Literally.
And they find Danny Boyle finds very artistic ways. There are some stylistic flourishes of his that I don't love. He does the Wong Kar Wai effect slow-mo thing where like there's frames missing and like it's like a stutter, movement he does a few times that like it kind of comes out of nowhere. He's used it before. It's a Danny Boyle thing too, but I think Wong Kar kind of pioneered it as his style. Stuff like that, I'm just like, yeah, that's unnecessary. But there are moments that are really, really benefit
at the same
for Boyle's
place as well, that the actual story happened.
Yeah, I didn't know that actually. That's wild. That's kind of dark, I guess, when you think about it. Like, hey, this is where that one guy did that thing that's awful. Let's do that thing.
Just dramatize it and glamorize it almost.
I then, because of John Wick Chapter 4, I was in the mood for something action, and I had bought for only 50 cents Shoot 'Em Up, the Clive Owen action film from the early aughts. And didn't know much about the movie. I always kind of wrote it off as just a silly action film that I guess I was kind of judgmental towards action films in the 2000s. Cause I also skipped the next movie I'm about to say for similar reasons. I had never seen a trailer. I didn't really know what the premise was. Shoot 'em Up is wild. It is an action comedy, and it is kind of making fun of the genre. It's not quite parody, but there's definitely some satire there about the genre. Like, it's the action's over the top. Clive Owen I'm not sure. He's not called Bugs, but he's definitely influenced by Bugs Bunny. Like, he's eating carrots throughout the movie. Like, the first kill in the movie is with a carrot. It's wild. He does call Giamatti. He says, "What's up, Doc?" So, like, it's not a oblique reference. Like, it is blatantly, there is a Bugs Bunny kind of quality to the film. Like, there's things that are Looney Tunes-esque. And it kind of works because it just has the tone. Like, the actors seem to be having a blast. Clive Owen is playing it straight, which sells it all the more. Like, he's not, like, smiling. He's being Clive Owen. And it just kind of works. It's a wild time. Some really cool needle drops in it, for sure. If you haven't seen it and you have access to it, I'd say it's worth watching if you like goofy action movies. It okay. is over the top. There's a lot of blood. Lots of blood.
Gotcha. I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's some dark tones too. Like, again, because it seems to be kind of making fun of action movies to a degree. But that led me to Crank, a Jason Statham film that I skipped for a long time. And it's not nearly as action-packed as I thought it would be. Like, it's mostly him, like, trying to stay alive, and there's not a whole lot of, like, shooting and fighting. There are scenes, but it's a lot of, like, him running and being silly. It might be the most silly I've seen Statham. Like, he's often wry, right? Like, in the Guy Ritchie movies, there's, like, this kind of wry sense of humor where it's, like, you know, he makes a snarky comment here and there. There's, like, a part where he does epinephrine, and he's like running down the street in like a hospital gown with an erection. And it's just like, what is Statham doing here? Like, this is wild. So I had not seen it. I don't know if I'm going to watch the sequel, cause I've heard the sequel's like real bad. But I mostly enjoyed Crank. It's wild. I like Statham. You know, I don't necessarily think he's not a versatile actor, but I do like his screen presence, and I tend to like action movies with him in them. And that was no different here. I didn't have any issues with Statham. But yeah, that's what I've been watching since the last time we recorded. So
the usual mixed bag of fun there, JB.
Yeah. You know, I've been on an action kick because of John Wick. It's one of those things where it's like, you do something and you're just like, oh, that was so cool. I want to have that feeling again. And then everything else afterwards isn't quite the same level that you had at John Wick. And that's what it's been. It's been like, yeah, I want to watch some more action movies. I want to have another experience like watching John Wick Chapter 4 for the first time. So far, swing and a miss on both of that feeling, but you know, still not bad. But that is the most of our episode. But before we leave, we have to check in with one another to make sure we're keeping our bloody awesome levels at optimal, quality control type situations. I stuttered all over that. I apologize. But nevertheless, Matt, I want to know, what have you been doing to stay bloody awesome since the last time we recorded?
I'm still counting, JB. I'm still counting.
Oh, yes.
Still counting those calories, JB. Still getting small incremental losses each week, but a loss is a loss. And still exactly. enjoying some of the foods I like, just not as much, not many donuts or any in that case, or cake, or chocolate, or full-fat fizzy drinks / soda. Doing well, but the work is still there to be done. I'm going to start implementing more of an actual training regime. At the minute, it's you stick to a controlled diet in terms of calorie intake and get your steps in. Get the steps in. You know, get used to doing that. And then once you can do that, let's go into more of an actual regime in terms of getting dumbbells and getting weights and everything like that thrown in and get the exercise in. So getting there slowly and surely, but still doing it. So, but this time next year, JB, maybe I can say I finally finished, but it'll be a long old road. But if I want to be like Burke, I've got to think like Burke. I've got to act like Burke. So I'm doing my best, JB. I'm still counting. But what about you? Have you been doing something a little bit more fun?
Well, I'm getting ready to travel to New Orleans for the Overlook Film Festival. Me and Tuna are driving up this the next day, like a day after we're recording this, and I'm super excited. I've never been to New Orleans before. It's a place I've wanted to visit. I'm very hyped for the food. I'm very hyped for this festival. It's a horror film fest. Renfield is opening night, so we see that. I see the new David DeSchmacklin horror film, something The Devil. I think I saw The Devil. Stephen King is raving about it, apparently. Yeah. So kind of hyped for that.
That man's got such a cool filmography in the last few years, last decade, and coming up. Interesting.
And then the sequel to Becky is at the festival, so I'm checking that out. I'm going to see Evil Dead Rise on Saturday night, and a couple of other movies that I've heard good things about that aren't popping in my brain right now. But and then, of course, again, did I mention the food? Renfield is opening night. And
tell me the food.
I'm very hyped. You know, there's going to be red velvet cake, and there's going to be beignets, and there's going to be Cajun food and Creole. I'm just all about seafood anyway, so I'm super hyped. We are staying in the area, I think the French Quarter. So I'm excited. We're walking distance from all the theaters that the festival's at. So yeah, looking forward to this opportunity. I'm grateful to get to be able to go and check it out. And I'll be writing some reviews and talking about some of those movies on next week's episode.
Only slightly jealous. I'm very jealous. I'd love to go to Overlook. But what I will say is I have tapped up JB for those food pictures and of course the Overlook vibes. I'd love to see some pictures of what the festival's like and, you know, the crowds, but hit me with those food snaps.
And I definitely shall, sir.
Nice.
With that, folks, that is our episode. We'll be back next week to talk about Dungeons and Dragons Honor Among Thieves. A movie that Matt and I saw like a month ago. So it's going to need some refreshing probably for us to really be able to talk about it. But we'll also have our spoiler episode of John Wick Chapter 4 dropping, where we'll talk a little bit about which action scenes really stood out to us. I know which one I cannot wait to talk about. In the meantime, follow us on social media. We're on Instagram at Bloody Awesome Movie Pod and Twitter.
At BAMP_podcast, BAMP_podcast.
And if you still use Facebook, you can search Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. You can follow us individually. I'm at BurkeReviews.com and at BurkeReviews on all the social media platforms. Matt, where can they find you?
WhatIWatchTonight.co.uk, and just search What I Watch Tonight across all the socials, including Letterboxd.
And if you like what we're doing here at the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast, we ask that you take just a minute and give us that 5-star rating on whatever podcast catcher you use to listen, because it helps other people find the show. And with that, we encourage you to keep watching movies
and stay bloody awesome. Blood, 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 bloody, 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 blood, blood, bloody. Awesome.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Blood, 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 bloody, blood, 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 bloody.